I'm Jody, the mom.
And I'm Dr. Barr, the doc.
And this is Mom and Doc Talk, where we talk all things healing pans and pandas.
We bring together the mom experience and the doc expertise to give you the information and tools you need to help make the next right decision to get your child back.
Let's dive in. I'm Jody, the mom.
And I'm Dr. Barr, the doc.
And this is Mom and Doc Talk, where we talk all things healing pans and pandas.
We bring together the mom experience and the doc expertise to give you the information and tools you need to help make the next right decision to get your child back.
Let's dive in.
Everybody, and welcome back to Mom and Doc Talk. We are joined today by a wonderful member of our team, Dr. Mariah Mosley, because we thought it was important to chat about one of the things that she's really passionate about talking about, which is establishing the foundations for health. And I'm just going to give you a heads up. We'll do our best to edit this out as much as we can, but I have something that's maybe trying to start a little cold. So if I get frogs in my throat or whatever, we'll do our best to edit things out and you might still hear things. So forgive me if we have any of that come up. So welcome, Dr. Mosley. Thank you so much for joining us today.
A little slightly nervous for public speaking, but here I am. So it'll be fun.
Well, you know what? The thing that's so lovely about podcasts is it's like public speaking, but not really public speaking. You know, we're just having a chit chat. And so many of our listeners have given us the feedback that they appreciate that it's just a conversation that they get to listen in on, that they might learn a little bit from. The good news is that we're talking about something that, like I said, you're really passionate about, and that is something that we talk about day in and day out with our clients and that we focus on for our own families too, right? And that's the foundations for health. So before we get started talking about specifics with that, as we were getting going before we recorded, you mentioned a specific paragraph or aphorism from the Organon of Medicine that you really want to lean on for this conversation. So do you want to kick us off with that?
Yeah. So I know you guys talked about 3 and 9 with Dr. Ben and Dr. Pace. I think, I don't know, I listened to this like I'm always delayed, but I think it was like, what, a month or two ago? And so this is 4. So he is likewise a preserver of health if he knows the things that derange health and cause disease and how to remove them from persons in health. So essentially, Hahnemann's talking about preventative medicine and the foundations for health and what cause disease. So,
yeah. And the he in there is the physician. So I'm reading from a different version. So mine says the physician is likewise a preserver of health if he knows the things that disturb it, that cause and sustain illness, and if he knows how to remove them from healthy people. And so there's a couple of things that he's really talking about here, right? He's talking both about he's talking about removing obstacles, but removing obstacles can also mean removing the lack of a foundation for health, right? So something that could cause or sustain illness isn't always a virus. It isn't always mold. It isn't always bacteria. It might be lack of sleep. It might be lack of sunshine. It might be lack of nutritious food. So let's just dive in. I mean, I've given 3 of them away already.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it.
So I think like sunshine is like, I really realized that when we moved to Alaska because our vitamin D levels tanked. And it was like when you have the darkness and you're not able to get outside, it was really, really difficult. Like I could throw so many remedies at myself and I just like wasn't able to get like truly happy. And so I think that, you know, that vitamin D just in general, but just like sunshine and like I was talking to somebody yesterday about like forest bathing and how like they're like, do you really think nature is that important? And because they love gardening and they're like, I feel good about gardening, but I just like, I don't know. Is that a thing? And I'm like, yes. And how like I told her about how like Japanese forest bathing was like proven to like increase like your natural killer cells and like your white blood cell count would improve. And it was just like, I think the basic things now we can like look and see that like, oh, actually there's a ton of research behind it. And we're actually like proving things that people just like, you know, knew 200 years ago. He knew this 200 years ago. And I think that, you know, it's like sleep, not only just like getting enough sleep, but like sleep cycles, right? I think we've talked about before is like when people will have like the reverse sleep cycles or like doing night shift, right? Like people don't realize that actually can really disrupt your health. Yeah, maybe you are getting, you know, 8 or 10 hours in, but if it's the opposite side, you can have some significant issues with like your cortisol and things. So
let's talk about each of these just one at a time, because I'm sure we've all got things that we can think about, and hopefully we don't lose any along the way. But I love what you bring up about sunlight being one of the first things, because it's one of those things that we can take for granted if we get a plenty of it, like I do in San Diego, California, that I didn't realize how much I was taking it for granted until I considered moving to Bellingham, Washington, which is nothing compared to Alaska, but is like it might be the most dreariest, like the dreariest city in the country, according to one report, the dreariest city in the country. And I only spent 9 days there and my brain did not work as well. It wasn't just that I couldn't get happy. I felt okay, but I'm not somebody who drinks a lot of caffeine. I needed like a half a pot of coffee minimum to get myself going. I just didn't have energy. Everything was slower. It just didn't work as well. And that was only 9 days. And I remember talking to a friend who had gone to school, naturopathic medical school up in, I think she went to the one in Portland and moved down. She lives in Palm Desert now. And she said she has a friend that has like grown up in the Pacific Northwest her whole life that moved to then Tucson, Arizona. And she said that she's like, I had no idea how important sun was for your brain to just function until I moved to a place where I had sun all the time. Like, silly me. You know, I knew I got seasonal affective disorder. I got depression in the winter because I grew up in Columbus, Ohio. Columbus, Ohio is also in like the top 10 dreariest cities in the winter. I lived in DC for a while. Also can be a pretty dreary, rainy place. I was like, oh, it's just gone. And I do think it's substantially better because I'm not nearly as bad as I would have been in that time that I spent in Bellingham. However, I can't take for granted that it's the constant like sunshine that I have and the access to it. And even though I love a rainy, cloudy day here, it's because it's not like that all the time. And my brain isn't as operating at the same deficit that it was. But of course, there's the vitamin D production, like you brought up, and the impact that vitamin D has on the immune system overall does have an influence on Pan's Pandas and how well the body is working with the tools that it's got as part of its innate immune response. What about you, Jody? What's your thoughts on sunlight?
I'm just sitting here like thinking about myself and I'm like, oh my gosh, we're about to have a back to the basics. But these are things like when I was in the throes of all the things with my girls, these things didn't cross my mind like they should. And so I love that we're getting a reminder here because I know that if I am sedentary inside, I feel one way. And if I go outside more frequently, and whether it be walk, whether it be stand in my yard, play in my garden, those things, I feel a whole lot better. And I think sometimes we can lose that in the craziness. And so I love the reminder.
Well, and then the next one you were going into, Dr. Mosley, was sleep. And the importance of sleep as one of the foundations for health. And the reason I love that you went there next is because your exposure to light impacts your sleep and it impacts management of your circadian rhythm. And so getting natural sunlight first thing in the morning is one of the most impactful things you can do to have a balanced circadian rhythm, which includes balanced hormones, right? And so the hormonal impacts that we see for Pan's Pandas, especially in teens, part of the shift with the hormonal impact and how things are getting a bit wonky in teens is that they do have a natural circadian shift, and we have their schedules generally set up so that their natural circadian shift doesn't allow the foundations for health that we need to experience to exist. So we're telling them that they need to get up before their body is really ready and able to. And then we're going to have them go and stay inside without morning sunlight. And so then it exacerbates some of the challenges that we've got with their already shifted circadian rhythm. So then they're not sleeping when they should. their hormones are out of balance because all of our hormones work on a circadian rhythm too. It's not just cortisol and melatonin, although those are the two big ones that sort of are the masters of the circadian clock. We still have rhythms within the day of progesterone, testosterone, estrogen. And when we don't have enough sleep or sleep at the time that our body really needs it and the cues to really upregulate and downregulate the different hormones, things can get out of whack. And then obviously we have the endocrine immune system that overlaps and can just make things get a little bit wonky and hectic. So let's talk about sleep.
Yeah. So I think that you brought up teenagers, and it's so interesting too, because, you know, we know that like the morning light helps like raise that cortisol and decreases melatonin because they kind of work in like a little mm-hmm. bit of a seesaw action here. But then at night too, and it's like so normal. And like, I do this, like I sit with my Kindle and like, I know that that's like light, right in front of my eyes. Every night I read my Kindle. And a lot of teenagers, what are they doing? They're watching TV, they're playing on their phones. And then that light, that bright light is not letting their melatonin rise naturally. And it kind of keeps their cortisol level up. So it's like, it's really difficult, but sleep hygiene can be so influential for people. You know, I will try, I put my Kindle on like night mode. So it's like very low. And then I have my phone, you know, in another room. So I don't have temptations. Mm-hmm. Usually an hour before bed, I just am like, okay, done. But if people are able to put their phone in another place for at least an hour and try to kind of like have that quiet time, like no bright lights, mm-hmm. no lights like right in the face and none of that overstimulation, it'll help. They won't have to be taking, you know, 2 to 5 grams of melatonin every night. Their melatonin will just like naturally be there mm-hmm. and ready as they go to sleep. And then, you know, it's blackout curtains for when you're in a very high place that it doesn't necessarily allow for darkness in the summers. So like looking at like Canada and like Minnesota can get pretty mm-hmm. light year round. Blackout curtains, you know, dark rooms. And then I hate this, but I know it's like scientific about how like sleeping cold helps sleep. Mm-hmm. Have you read about like how your because my husband actually brought this up to me. He's like, look, this is what I'm supposed to do. I would be ideally, like I sleep probably like 75, 78. Like I know it's so gross, but like, I love it. I'm like, I'm just a cold blooded little reptile and I would love like a very hot room. And my husband's like, you don't sleep well. I don't sleep well. The baby doesn't sleep as well. Like we have to have this house cold. And now he showed me it's actually very true. You have to. Yeah. Like, it's better to sleep cold.
Yes.
It's really hard for me. But I know that that's another big part of sleep hygiene is trying to get the house cold. I don't know.
Within reason, yes.
Yeah.
But absolutely, we do tend to sleep better if we keep it on the colder side. You would hate sharing a place with me, Dr. Mosley, because if I'm in a hotel, the lowest it will go is 65. And I know that because I've tried to get it to go lower. So it is better to sleep in a colder space. It is better to reduce light exposure. There are ways that you can work around it to a degree, but nothing is going to be as good as avoidance. So overhead lights are not going to be as good as like dim, like lower like lamps that have a lampshade around them that you're not looking directly at. If you've got blue light blocking glasses, that's going to help some. If you've got blue light blocking glasses and you've got night shift on your computer or your phone or your Kindle, where you're reducing the amount of light and the color is more of like an amber color, it's going to help. It's the best absolute would be to read a paper book or an old Kindle with an amber reading light that's just shining on it and not into your eyes. And I've noticed the difference of when I use my old Kindle versus my new Kindle versus an iPad versus if I'm like scrolling on, if I'm watching a TV show or scrolling on Instagram or TikTok or something. Each of those, that's increasing severity for how it impacts my sleep and what I've seen for my clients as well. So there are ways to work around it, but you still ultimately need to give your body the cues that it needs if you want it to be able to sleep on its own. What are your thoughts, Jody, from the mom perspective here?
I think that one of the, like, I was always, and first, Dr. Mosley, it's because you're so young. When you get older, you'll be hot and ornery like the rest of us. So there's
hope
for you.
It's true. Your husband will be complaining and saying it's too cold in here.
Anyways, it was always, like, that was my number one thing when my girls were little. Like, I was on it with sleep schedules. I grew up in a family where we just needed extra sleep. Sleep is really important. We got lots of sleep, and I always had my girls getting lots of sleep. PANS came along and blew that out of the water. Mm-hmm. And it didn't matter how hard I tried when Avery was in it, like getting her back to that, like I couldn't do it. So I was just thinking about how grateful I was that homeopathy returned her back mm-hmm. to that ability to get good sleep, the ability to sleep alone, fall asleep within a reasonable amount of time instead of hours, and then wake up and then get back to sleep. So
yeah,
super cool that.
And I'm glad that you make sure we bring it back to the community that we serve and that they're going to have challenges that are not in alignment, like not going to make just following the typical sleep hygiene advice is not necessarily going to work. And let's not work against ourselves either. Like, let's not add additional challenges to the sleep by bringing in these other things that might give some relief and also make another part of things worse. If that makes sense. So I'm thinking of the parents that I've worked with who had to accept it was going to be a struggle for a period of time when they took away their phone that was preventing a big tantrum or a big meltdown, but also interfering with sleep. And that, yes, the tantrums and meltdowns got worse as the adaptation was happening, but then sleep started to improve and things got better on the other end. One other thing that I should just add that I realize is not, depending on where you're at in the throes of PANS PANDAS, is not going to be accessible to everybody. Sleeping in on weekends is not your friend. If you are tired and you need more sleep, go to bed early. Don't sleep in late. When you sleep in late, you put your body into jet lag every weekend. And so, because then if you have a schedule you have to follow on the weekdays, you end up throwing your circadian clock off every weekend. And it's just as bad for your body as jet lag, just as bad for your body as the time change. For those of us who live in places where the time change happens, and in the United States, it's coming up this weekend. So we're going to have more hospital admissions because the time change is not good for our body. Neither is sleeping in every weekend where you're essentially putting your body through time change every weekend. So where should we go next? Do you want to talk about food? Do you want to talk about exercise? Do you want to talk about fresh air? What do you think?
Yeah. And I also will say too, Jody, because I think it is hard when we're in the throes, you know, it's going to be impossible to have like hit every single box with the foundation of health. Usually what I tell people is like, try to focus on like a few that are possible. If like right now sleep is going to be wonky and like, they're kind of like, I'm not even going to look at that box right now because that's just impossible and it's way too hard. Focus on like, you know, getting outside, right? Because getting outside, like sunshine in general, like being in nature, diet, etc., will eventually help with this other box that we're not focusing on. So it's not that like we have to be perfect. It's like, let's focus on a couple things. And then those couple things usually will help the other foundations of health.
It's a spider web that you tug on one part and it pulls others along. Exactly. Maybe not right away, but it does.
It does. Yeah. I think that one thing that is very difficult because I know a lot of these kids can be homebound, but we still can get it is like connection to others. Yeah. And this is sometimes like people don't recognize, especially like during COVID, like we were having so much of like anxiety and depression and things like the kiddos. And it's like normal human nature needs to be connected to others. Like we as mamas need to be connected to other mamas that are, you know, mm-hmm. with other things. And that's why the group is so helpful because it connects a lot of moms and families in the podcast too. Like when people are listening, they're like, okay, people are out there. They know my struggle. They know like what we're going through. And I think that just like human connection is like an absolute like big basic foundation that like people will forget about and like, you know, that doesn't always look like, you know, a little child with 20 best friends, but like even just like one good friend or like a mom or sibling that they can like connect with. I think isolation can be really prominent with this community. Like parents feel isolated and kids feel isolated. Mm-hmm. But that's one that like is helpful to kind of like, how can we get more connection? Because it's like human beings just need that.
And again, baby steps.
Yeah.
Take it where you can. It's not always going to look like the way you want it to or what you envisioned for your child or for your family. And even like a little bit is better than none. And if none is what you've got right now, focus on, as Dr. Mosley just said, focus on one of the other things that is accessible, because we get it. Like, all of these things have their challenges with PANS and PANDAS, where the foundations are not always even remotely accessible to you. But do the best you can, even a little bit. It does not have to be perfect, but even a little bit is better than none.
And I'll say too, it doesn't always have to be human connection. It can be, I have a lot of dogs that, like, they will connect with their dog and that fills their bucket. And they don't need to have, you know, all the friends. They have their animal, right? Or I have another little girl who, like, she'll ride horses and that fills her bucket unimaginably. And she just is like the happiest little thing afterwards. And mm-hmm. like, I think that, you know, my dog, would I spend time with someone, human or a dog? I don't know. Sometimes I'd rather spend an hour with my dog. Mm-hmm. So I think that it's like, it's not always human connection too. It can be connection to a loving little animal that's going to give you a lot of affection and undying love.
Yeah.
I think that's a perfect thing for us to hear, because as PANS families, me especially, like, we retracted. Like, it just made everything easier to manage if we weren't interacting with people. But then I also recognized there was a point where we could have been getting out more as Avery was healing, and I still wasn't doing it. I think out of fear of Avery being judged, but also at some point I realized that kids don't see symptoms like we as parents see symptoms. They're like pretty oblivious to them, in fact. Mm-hmm. And so connecting, whatever that looks like, and everybody can talk on FaceTime now, you know, whether it be a conversation, but I also love that you say animals too. That was a tool for us when my younger one was so sick and she was homebound, was getting her a dog. And that, like, that was her love, still is her love.
Yeah. All right. So what else should we chat about today?
Let's see.
Let's talk about food. And that's obviously, especially with ARFID, can be a really big one. And with kids who have MCAS or other, you know, mast cell issues, food sensitivities, food allergies, this can be a challenge. But having nutritious food is important. You know, we need the nutrients. Homeopathy and it can only work with what it's given, right? So homeopathy is the nudge for the body to do what it is built to do naturally, which is to heal itself, and it needs the tools to do it. So it needs the vitamins to put together the macronutrients to build the scaffolding to have a more functional immune system. We're only going to go so far. You know, you can't cure rickets with homeopathy, right? You can only cure rickets with vitamin D. You can't cure scurvy with homeopathy. You can only cure that with vitamin C. We're not seeing that level of vitamin deficiency and nutrient deficiency in PANS, PANDAS, kiddos. But we are seeing some smaller degree of nutrient deficiencies. We are seeing more functional deficiencies, which might mean that you're taking enough of something in, but the body's not using it appropriately. Homeopathy can help with that, but we need to at least start with having enough intake. The bigger concern that we have is when we've got kiddos who can only eat and will only eat McDonald's French fries. And that's it, with something that has very little nutritional value. And we know sometimes that, like, you have to feed your kid, because we also know, in a way that many pediatricians unfortunately don't know, you can't just set a plate of food down in front of a PANS kid and say they'll get hungry enough that they'll eventually eat. They won't. They'll end up in the hospital and they'll be on TPN, you know, the transparental nutrition, yeah. IV nutrition, right? So we understand that you just do the best that you can. Find the little bits where you can to get the nutrition in. Even if it means that you found the one green thing they will eat. They get it every day. They get it potentially even every meal. Jody, I'm going to let you jump in here, because I know you've had a lot of dietary challenges with your family. You've probably got a lot to add that then Dr. Mosley and I can comment on.
I don't, like, dietary stuff has absolutely ruled my world since my second daughter was born. And it's been so interesting. Avery was always such a healthy eater, like would eat anything and everything. And then Pans came along and all of a sudden that like slowed down. And she didn't have a ton of eating stuff. She had some fear of specific foods. But getting her back to a good, healthy diet, homeopathy helped with that. Yep. But also too, part of it was my like adjusting what I'm doing as a parent, which is really hard because I love my kid. I want to buy her the chips she wants. I want to like, I want her to be like joyful in her eating, but then it just slowly rolls into like snack, 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 snack. And so I really had to like just stop buying the stuff, like stop buying the stuff I don't want her to eat, stop having it in my house in order to keep her at that good foundation. And then my other daughter's just a different story. She has a ridiculously healthy diet, but unfortunately she's allergic to an insane amount of food. Homeopathy is helping with that. And we're kind of slowly getting to the point of challenging her and having her eat foods we know she's going to react to. And using homeopathy to help with those reactions. So we're kind of all over the spectrum with dietary stuff. But I do recognize that, you know, when my girls are eating healthy, there's less what I would call symptoms. Mm. And so it's something that we have to be mindful of because the food, unfortunately, that is available to our children and everyone today is part of what can make people sick and can cause symptoms. So is it really a symptom or do we have a kid that has behavioral issues because they're eating blue food dye? So
I just, the thing that comes to mind is from when I was a brand new mom and nursing was not the easiest thing for me, managed to somehow pull it out with a lot of grit and hard work and tenacity. I remember battling internally with breast is best, no fed is best, no breast is best, no fed is best. And the oh my God, what's going to happen to my kid if she has to have any formula? And when it comes right down to it, you have to, like, a child has to eat. They have, like, it doesn't do us any good if you're only offering the perfect food and they won't eat any of it versus offering the worst food you can imagine, but they will eat it. So the way I finally had to wrap my head around, and then I wrap my head around with the kids that we work with too, as a naturopathic doctor, this is like a departure from like how you are trained. You know, there's It's like gut, 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 diet, 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 diet. One, let's not create more dysfunction in these kids' brains with really strict diets. One. Two, you won't get anywhere if you don't have calories. So first, let's focus on making sure they have calories so their body at the very least has energy to work with what nutritional resources it does have. So calories first. Then let's work on macronutrients over micronutrients, making sure that you're getting calories in, then making sure you're getting some protein, some fat, and some fiber. If you can get fiber in, you're getting some nutrients in. There can be supplementation to help with the micronutrients in a way that's easier than doing the macronutrient supplementation and better for you. So that's where I would start. Calories first, then macronutrients. Then we're going to work on getting as broad a micronutrient variety of food we possibly can through fruits, vegetables, different protein sources, whole grains, whatnot. And with homeopathy, it can help facilitate that progression through things, right? By nudging the body to heal, because a body that is doing well and is healthy, the homeopathy is part of that spider web. You tug on things and it's moving it into a healthier direction. You're going to be more drawn to healthier foods, right? To healthy amounts of foods, healthy variety of foods, healthy selection. And a healthy variety of foods can include treat foods, right? It doesn't have to be that you never have those treats you want your kids to enjoy, Jody. It just isn't what they have every single day.
Yeah. And I think it's hard because I would say that diet is like, as a doc, it's like that is, well, a dog for these kiddos. It's the one that it's like, for me, I am like the, it's the one that I don't push the hardest.
Right,
just
same.
Because diet is so hard. And just like you said, like we just need calories sometimes. Mm-hmm. So what I'll often do is I kind of just let homeopathy take care of it for the most
same.
Part. Plus I will say like, okay, if there are certain things, like if, for example, like the blue dye, right? Or if like food dyes, artificial flavorings, or like eggs or sugar or like dairy or whatever, if there's like one or two, like, okay, we know that this is a big trigger and we have a flare every single time we have this specific food, I'm like, okay, we should probably take that out, right? But that's, I usually don't say like, let's do a huge diet change, because that's just not going to be helpful until like we're already in a place where we're like, we're eating good, we're healthy, we're mm-hmm. you know, homeopathy has healed us significantly, then we can like, you know, kind of focus on like finessing a good diet. But at the beginning, I'm like, is there anything like really causes like huge flares? Maybe we can kind of like try to taper that out, but let's just let homeopathy, you know, do this. Because just like you said, mm-hmm. it's pulling it along. And diet, I feel like, is so difficult for these families. And we don't want them to be going to the hospital. We don't want them to be losing weight and dropping off growth charts. So let's just try to get, you know, try to do what we can. And then homeopathy will take the rest.
Right.
I think the fact that Resilience understands this is such a relief and burden off of the PANS community, because there's like, I have talked to moms before that are in tears that are like, my kid's never going to be able to heal because of dietary thing. And we work in reverse order. Like we get the body working better as a whole, and then kids naturally kind of go in the direction of wanting to eat healthier foods. So that's so relieving for the PANS community.
Well, and I got to say, if I had 10 kids with PANS here in my office and they'd all been told, as most of them are, to go off of gluten and dairy, whether it's from another doctor or they've just heard it from other parents, some of the worst, most processed stuff that I see these kids eat are their gluten-free and dairy-free versions. I'd rather them eat the dairy than that has actually more of those macronutrients and some micronutrients that are going to be useful as foundations than to eat processed dairy, but not have like the forbidden dairy. Unless, of course, it is a really, really, really big reaction. And then I'm going to say no dairy or dairy alternatives, just no dairy. Right. So, and then, and even then it's going to be short term, because remember, homeopathy can help address reactions you have to food and sensitivities that you have to food. The last one that I can really think of is exercise. Is there anything else besides exercise that we really need to talk about?
I think like getting outside in sunshine is kind of the same thing, like being in nature.
Fresh exercise. Air. And you can combine all those things together, and like, and the social connection too, you know? Yeah. And so moving your body every day is pretty important. And we can't expect that if we aren't moving our body, that we're not going to feel kind of crappy in lots of different ways, right?
Stagnant lymph flow, you know, muscles aren't building. You're going to be more constipated if you aren't moving. Then you're going to be able to get your bowels.
Well, and just exercise itself, it triggers cascades of neurotransmitters and hormone release that are important for our overall well-being and is part of the way that our bodies are built. There's reasons that people are telling you exercise this time of day, not this time of day. It's because of the neurotransmitter and hormone release that comes with exercise, and whether it's going to be upregulating or overstimulating, or if it's how it's going to help facilitate a good balance in the rest of your day with these foundations for health.
I feel like I'm a poster child for doing this wrong right now. And it's so interesting because I've been so sedentary and I'm like, oh my gosh, my whole body hurts. Like, what's wrong with me? I'm like sick, or I'm getting sick or whatever. And I never get sick. And then I'm like, okay, I am not moving enough. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, I'll start walking, but let me grab my kids and do it. Us all do it together. And literally every single time I do that, it's the best thing ever. My girls roller skate while I walk, so I have to walk really fast to keep up with them. But we were walking yesterday and they were roller skating in front of me, and they were like talking and gossiping and school stuff and boys and all this stuff. And I was just walking behind them thinking how grateful I was that we were all out getting exercise and being together. So it can be more than just having to drag yourself through doing some sort of exercise. There's or a good podcast or some good music, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And that's awesome too, because it's like that 10, 15 minutes, you hit like four of them, right? We have the connection mm-hmm. with the others, the physical exercise, sunshine, getting outside. Like it can just be like, okay, 10 minutes, 15.
Yeah.
And it I is, think even, sorry, I think if even in the throes of it, because I used to go for walks a lot whenever they were really sick, and it was awful because they would fight with each other. And I was like, oh my gosh, why do I do this? Why don't I go on a walk by myself? But at the same time, I'm getting the things, right? They're getting nature, they're getting air, they're getting sun. So it's worth it to get some of those foundations in. Yeah. And now they don't fight anymore, thanks to homeopathy. I mean, they do fight, but nothing like back then, yeah. thanks to homeopathy.
So it's just a reminder that we all need to hear this. One of my best friends yesterday texted me and said, hey, do you have any tricks in your naturopathic toolkit for brain drain? And I was like, well, let's start with the foundations, which is so funny because this is what we're talking about today. I said, have you slept? How are you eating? Have you given yourself any nutritious food? Have you exercised? Have you gotten any sun or fresh air? And she's like, nope. Nope, nope, nope. And I was like, and you think your brain's going to work great? And she's like, okay, these are all good reminders. So we all need them. And this is not somebody who has a pan's child. You know, this is somebody who doesn't even have a child. We all need these reminders. And a little bit of any of these things is better than none. So many of us, especially women and especially moms, parents of all genders, right, can really get stuck in perfectionism. And if I can't do, I need to do 50 minutes of Pilates, or I might as well not do anything. 5 minutes of Pilates is better than 0 minutes of Pilates. And for some people, 50 minutes is far too much. That's another thing we need to remember, is sometimes we can overdo things and cause our own imbalance and dysfunction as well, right? So you can overdo sun and get sunburns and get cancer. You can overdo exercise and have nutrient depletion and muscle wasting as a result of overdoing exercise and throw your hormones completely out of balance. You can have overuse injuries. You can overdo healthy eating and end up with an eating disorder. You can overdo sleep and end up getting depressed because, again, your hormones can get out of whack and out of balance. And then you're also not having the capacity to do the other things that you need to do, like moving your body and eating well. So it's all about balance. It is not an all or nothing. You can do too much and you can do too little. Do the best that you can. What works for one person isn't what's going to be what works for somebody else. Listen to yourself. Listen to your intuition. Take the baby steps and remember, a move in one section of a spider web is going to pull the other parts of the spider web along. They will come. You don't have to force it. You just have to make one good decision that's a little bit better than the one that you made before. And it doesn't even every day doesn't have to be a little bit better than the day before. It needs to be the best you can do that day. Right?
Yeah.
And as you continue to heal, and as these things start to pull themselves together, and as you're healing with homeopathy, your best days will get better. And just like with homeopathy, we're not looking for perfection and like a linear process. We're looking at trends over time, and we're looking at making sure that we're just doing the best that we can on each day, and that overall, we're heading in the right direction. Something made me just realize I needed to probably add this in, that you might need to listen to yourself too and find your own balance for what takes priority, for what's both possible for you and what's most important. For instance, I typically get up at 5 a.m. and we're writing a book, and I write the book at 5 a.m. because it's the time that works for me. And then I typically do my exercising after I get my kiddo to school. I could not sleep last night, and it was related to something with a medication. I couldn't sleep very well last night. So my 5 a.m. alarm got turned off, and my Pilates class for today got canceled because I'm depleted in one area. So trying to force myself to do something else is going to deplete me further, even though I had something scheduled. And it is within my best day, things that I would be doing, they're not possible for me today. That doesn't mean it's not possible for me tomorrow. So that's today. And today doesn't have to impact tomorrow. We make choices today that might be outside of what our goal is, but with the bigger goal being more consistency, more frequency of these foundations for health, even if today it means I'm doing the bare minimum that I can do so that I'm not overtaxing myself so that I can get the sleep that I need tonight and not create unintentional injuries for myself with my food choices, my exercise habits, my social battery, and my expectations of myself on those things. Any final thoughts, ladies?
I was just going to say thank you for giving us permission to not be perfect at it, because I think that's where a lot of us get stuck, is it has to look a certain way every day. And
yeah,
and it's not, we're not crashing the ship if we mess up a day or two.
And it's not even that too. It's like, you know how like, oh, as a woman's cycle, you know, we have like good weeks where we're like really like productive, and then we have some like low weeks where we're not as productive, like with estrogen mm-hmm. and progesterone changes and our menses. And it's like, even if like you have a couple days where you just like need to pause, like get back into it. It's mm-hmm. okay. And allow the ups and the downs as hormones. Yes.
And the more that you allow yourself to have days that are not perfect instead of trying to push through them, the better and faster you'll rebound to get back to the what you actually want things to be, versus the more you're fighting against it and saying it should be this. And the more shame and guilt we add to the pile of the things that aren't going the way we want to, that shame and guilt weighs things down so much more, and like 10x increases the weight of them and makes it less likely that we're going to get back to the things that we're trying to do. It just, it doesn't work for anybody, truly. It might work for a very short term, but eventually it won't, because shame and guilt are not very good motivators.
No, at all.
All right. Well, hopefully that gives you some ideas for the foundations for health. And I know that there's probably some stress that some people are feeling because they're just not accessible to you now. And remember, a little bit is better than none. One is better than none. And one thing that starts to improve will pull the rest. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Take care, everybody.
Bye. Bye.
We hope you found this episode helpful, hopeful, and inspiring. We would love to connect with you on social media and have you as part of our amazing community. You can find us on Facebook by searching for Homeopathy for Pans and Pandas.
If Facebook isn't your thing, you can also connect with us on Instagram and YouTube by searching for Resilience Naturopathic or clicking the links in our show notes. You can also visit our website, resiliencenaturopathic.com.
As always, we value your partnership in advocacy and education. Your support through following, sharing, rating, and reviewing our podcast is crucial in our mission to teach the world about PANS, PANDAS, and homeopathy. So if you found this podcast helpful, please leave us a review. Together, we are making a difference.
And finally, this podcast really is for you. Your questions and feedback help us make sure we are answering the right questions so you can feel confident making the next right step for your kids. Send us your questions or request guests by emailing us at podcast@resiliencenaturopathic.com, also linked in the show notes.
We hope you found this episode helpful, hopeful, and inspiring. We would love to connect with you on social media and have you as part of our amazing community. You can find us on Facebook by searching for Homeopathy for Pans and Pandas.
If Facebook isn't your thing, you can also connect with us on Instagram and YouTube by searching for Resilience Naturopathic or clicking the links in our show notes. You can also visit our website, resiliencenaturopathic.com.
As always, we value your partnership in advocacy and education. Your support through following, sharing, rating, and reviewing our podcast is crucial in our mission to teach the world about PANS, PANDAS, and homeopathy. So if you found this podcast helpful, please leave us a review. Together, we are making a difference.
And finally, this podcast really is for you. Your questions and feedback help us make sure we are answering the right questions so you can feel confident making the next right step for your kids. Send us your questions or request guests by emailing us at podcast@resiliencenaturopathic.com, also linked in the show notes.